California. Uh-huh. But our operation is Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. We are a national organization. We do have operations there in California, in the northern part of the state, as well as in the San Diego area.
Okay. What sparked the creation of your organization, Chris? I guess, got to do something, right?
That's correct. I was formerly a elementary school teacher in Los Angeles. And, of course, you know, it was pretty obvious that illegal immigration was a problem, and the fact that right along with the well-intentioned, hardworking people that are just coming to better their lives, there were also an inordinate number of people coming to engage in criminal activity. So living in Los Angeles, that was fairly prevalent during the 80s and into the 90s, where you had some of the African-American gangs being actually put out of business by Hispanic gangs that were setting up shop and flooding into our communities. But basically, after September 11th, I decided that I needed to do something to help my country and pitch in as my civic duty. Just by chance, I took a vacation to a national park along the border with Arizona and Mexico, Oregon Pike National Park. And I was back in the country hiking and camping for approximately a week, and running into large groups of people just flooding, you know, through this park, drug dealers, talking to the park rangers in the park and realizing that they'd been inundated with people, with drugs and the crime, and then talking to Border Patrol in that area. And it became evident that, you know, with the crackdown on visas and legal immigration that supposedly our government was going to engage in after the attacks of September 11th to clean up the mess, the folks were just flooding into the unprotected back door in that sense. And I decided at that point, after I spent about 3 months investigating the border, learning from the ranchers and the local law enforcement, the county sheriffs and the Border Patrol, how out of control it was. And you just add two and two together and you say, you know what, this is where the next terrorists are going to enter this country. And we have a problem with crime coming across the border.
It's amazing it hasn't happened in the ensuing 5 years.
It's absolutely amazing. Well, when you look at Border Patrol last year apprehending 1.3 million people representing 148 nationalities, it's a clear and present danger.
How would you vocalize the reason for our government not getting on the stick and securing the borders? It all has
well,
to do
Well, that's where,
yeah.
You know, Michael, after, like I said, investigating the problem and listening to the law enforcement agents that work along the border, going into the local communities and learning about how out of control it was and that no one in Washington, D.C. was addressing the serious public safety issue, the threat to the public safety and the national security, that's where we decided that, look, letter writing, town hall meetings, lobbying in Washington, D.C. was doing nothing. And it wasn't until a group of citizens joined me in October of 2002 when we decided to start our own citizen border watch operation to go out and help Border Patrol, but more than anything, bring national attention to this outrageous issue and expose the hypocrisy in Washington, D.C., and to expose and help everyone connect the dots. NAFTA, CAFTA, you know, the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, now the impending North American Union, and seeing how they've set this up to erase our borders over over a span of 5 or 10 years. I think they would be the those who supposedly represent us in Washington, D.C. I'm afraid who are more Washington, D.C. has become more of a corporatist oligarchy than anything, that they seem to work for the economy only, for corporate America, for business, rather than for safety. And you look at the American citizens, the innocent citizen who has died or become a victim of the crime, I think that our representatives in Washington, D.C., many of them just consider those collateral damage in propping up the economy, bringing in cheap goods, having an endless supply of cheap labor that we can exploit.
But at the cost of the safety. Now, from talking with you earlier, you came up with a new angle that no one had ever talked about, and that's the safety of our country after 9/11. It sounds like nobody ever did get around to talking about that, except you guys are talking about it now publicly.
when we have been for many years working with the families, the 9/11 families, those who became victims of again, a failed immigration process that we have in the country.
Right.
And looking at the fact that, you know, even, and I'm telling you, our government's failed us miserably, even since September 11th, when they promised us that they would get a grip on the visa systems and know who's coming in and into the country and for what purpose they're there, entering the country and knowing when they leave. U.S. Marshals and Immigration Customs Enforcement are looking for over 500,000 people who still entered the country legally and disappeared into the shadows of America. And it's an outrageous situation. It's unacceptable. And I think Americans, what we've done is awaken them to the fact that the government has failed us.
Okay, so what specifically are you doing? You're sort of spearheading the drive, I understand, to build a fence, a real fence at $250 a foot, and that's where you come in, our audience. And you need supporters, it says here, donors and volunteers that make this. So you think a fence is gonna do it, huh?
A fence has worked very effectively in the areas where it has been erected. And this specific kind of fence, if you look at the San Diego sector, that's the kind of fence that we're looking at. It's a triple-layered system using technology, cameras, and a rapid response team of personnel who can respond to an incursion. Interesting thing occurred. In that 30-mile sector where that fence has been erected, previous to it being constructed, they averaged 10, 15,000 people a day who would come into this country through that San Diego sector. Once they constructed that fence, it dropped to virtually zero. Now, granted, a resourceful criminal or someone who's intent on entering this country.
Yeah, geez, I mean, they'll just go to where the fence isn't, you know.
Right. Yeah, they do. They're very resourceful, very determined, as are the drug cartels.
Has anybody figured out what the cost for a real fence that will go all the way across the border, every foot of it, every lineal foot would cost at $250? How many feet? We know how many. I don't know. I don't even know how many miles there are. It's not 3,000 because it's not, you know, the whole length of.
It's just under 2,000 miles.
It's under 2,000 miles. So how many feet are there in a mile? 5,280 times whatever you said here.
52. It would be an enormous public works project. But we're looking at the 700 miles that were proposed through studies to be erected in specific areas to where you can get a grip on the out-of-control illegal immigration and the criminal activity.
It could
and
significantly stem the tide, as you say it has in San Diego. But, wow, I mean, gosh. So are you actually doing it? Are you raising funds for this? Is it happening?
Yes. What we've done is we've come to the aid of private ranchers. Private individuals who were fed up with waiting on the federal government. We were approached by a few landowners that said, look, we would very much be willing to help you erect a fence to help protect our property, but as a symbolic project to prove to the American people that fences can be built, and more importantly, show the American people how much it should cost. As we know, anytime you turn over a project to the federal government, it's going to end up costing you 10 times what it should.
Okay, how much should it cost to do the minimum that you think needs to be done? What's that figure?
A double-layered fence with a vehicle barrier and high-tech cameras would cost about $1.2 million per mile. And that's approximately what our fence will end up costing when it's completed. So the federal government now is telling us that that's going to cost us $10 million a mile. Where is the overrun? And again, I think it has to do with
$600 hammers.
Exactly.
Yeah, and toilets.
But we've shown that we have the will, that American people have the will, they want it. It is a shame that we have to build fences. Let's start there. That our federal government refuses to gain operational control of the border, refuses to hold Mexico accountable for helping us in a bilateral relationship to get a grip on the drug cartels, who are now engaged in slave trade and human smuggling and the sex slave industry.
Well, why should they? I mean, Mexico is benefiting from all this.
They're
bringing us down and we're bringing them up.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a no-brainer that they, you know, why should they ever change, regardless of who's in charge there? You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special on AM 1080 KSCO, your favorite radio station, MZ, with special guest Chris Simcox about the Minutemen border fence project. You're invited to call in 479-1080 in area 831 is the number to call if you want to chip into the conversation. My good friend Andy Anderson is on the line here. Let's bring Andy into the conversation, and I just want to make this more of an informal conversation here. It's not every day that we have a man who's doing something about this problem, like Chris is and his organization, on to talk with us. So it's your opportunity to say hey to Chris, as you will do now. Hey, Andy.
Hi, good morning, good morning.
Hey.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Oh, I thought you might have had a question, Andy, because I know you have very strong feelings about this particular issue.
Well, yeah, in fact, I stand corrected if I don't have what I'm about to say to be exactly correct, because it's been so long since I thought about this, but during the Spanish-American War, our border from the Gulf of Mexico to California was closed with the 1st Cavalry, and I think it was General Pershing. So if I'm wrong about that, somebody can call in, but the border has been closed. This is not the first time this has needed to be done.
What do you know about that, Chris?
That's correct. General Pershing and the cavalry, as well as many of the local ranchers, made sure that at that period of time when national security was of utmost importance, as it was during World War II as well, people pitched in, became the eyes and ears for the federal government, and helped identify when these incursions were occurring. So for anyone and holding elected office, anyone holding public office who says we can't do this, has no business holding that office and should be removed and replaced with someone who has a can-do attitude.
Chris, I like what you just said. I was going to comment on that. First off, these people who are elected have a constitutional mandate to protect us. And any legislator who refuses, you know, they passed the okay to build the fence, but they won't fund it. And you're exactly right. This is a populist issue. This really isn't Democrat or Republican. This is about the protection of a nation's sovereignty.
That's correct.
You go ahead.
Well, that is what we've said from day one, that this is the greatest threat to our national security. Homeland security should begin at our borders. And our northern border is in shambles as well. And I can tell you some horror stories about our operations along the northern border. But it's become a public safety issue. The crime that has affected every community around this country, and I travel around this country, I speak to groups everywhere, Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, it doesn't matter. The border has now ended up in everyone's backyard, and the crime that has come across that border is what we're deeply concerned about. It's causing the deaths of thousands of Americans and immigrants who, for some reason, can't wait or don't want to wait and come in legally and put their lives at risk by putting their lives in the hands of these criminal smuggling operations where almost every woman pays a higher price, if you know what I mean, about getting into this country. And many of them are separated and sold into prostitution and slavery in this country. We have a moral obligation as a nation to say we want to protect immigrants. We're going to shut down that border. We're going to stop the deaths in the desert. We're going to bring an end to the exploitation of humans. We're going to smash these drug cartels and take the poison off the streets and eliminate the crime that comes right along with it. We've had 17 murders in Phoenix, Arizona here in the last 3 weeks, all committed by foreign nationals in this country illegally. It's outrageous, the crime, and the police are alarmed at the spike in crime that has increased almost daily.
Has anybody been fighting you, Chris?
I think that, unfortunately, this issue has turned into an ethnic group-on-group issue. You have the human rights groups who seem to want to turn this into a civil rights issue and mask and distract everyone's attention away from the crime and the fact that it's still illegal activity. Yes, they're human beings.
Are they stupid or are they evil? they got to be one of the two.
I think it's a liberal flawed ideology based on the fact that they're masking their own sense of racism in this sense or entitlement based on the fact of their ethnicity or the color of their skin. And I think that's been the greatest disservice for groups to turn this into a white versus brown issue. I never, if you've noticed, I've never said a word about any specific group of people. It's not about that. It is about our government's failure to do its job. And this nation is built on the rule of law, and we have a breakdown in the rule of law, which starts at the border and is now in our streets, where we've seen, coming up again on May 1st, you're going to see millions of people who broken our laws, who show no respect to our culture of lawful behavior, marching in the streets, flying flags of foreign countries, speaking foreign languages, and threatening us as a nation to allow them to live within a double standard of law and basing it on the color of their skin and their race. That is wrong. That is not what this issue is about. It is about legal immigration, the sovereignty of our borders, and those who wish to become American citizens respecting our culture, which is based on law.
Well, have you not been effective in getting that message about what it's all about, and it's not about racism or discrimination or anything like that? I mean, have you been unsuccessful?
No, we've been very successful across the country. Americans don't buy anyone who plays the race card in this country at this point on this issue is deemed not credible, and obviously has an agenda that is not within the scope of what we're talking about.
Go ahead, Andy. If I may, Chris, this is a very skillful distraction on that liberal agenda that wants to take up your time and energy doing the race thing. And again, I like what I hear. You're just not going that direction. I'd also like to comment that for those folks that don't live close to the border and don't hear a lot about it, it's not in their everyday conversations. Chris, years ago I used to do a show on KSCO, and this is one of the subjects that we used to address. And I often like to just reduce things down from great big to real small. And when NAFTA, I was appealing to the Santa Cruz listeners to not vote for Bill Clinton because I knew NAFTA would soon follow. And what I would say when I was doing radio was that this type of a law, once it's passed, basically opens the door to your border. And to reduce it down a little smaller scale, basically what they're saying is, we're going to pass a law that says you have to take the front door off your home, and you have to take the back door off your home, and you got to let anybody go through your home anytime they want to. And you don't have any choice in the matter. And that's what's happened to our borders.
And it's happened to our communities in the sense that not only do you have to allow them to walk through your home, now you're held accountable for making sure you feed them, that you take care of their health insurance, that they're allowed to have privileges such as driving, which is a privilege, it's not a right, that is based on a standard of proficiency and accountability, that you have to give them all of that free, or they'll turn around and, again, like you said, distract everyone's attention away from the real issue by playing the race card and saying you're just against a certain group of people.
Speaking of driving, we have a listener named Linda on a cell phone driving through Livermore, and she is called and wants to...
Well, when he comes on, I'll tell you.
Hey, Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey. Okay, you can hear me?
Yes, fine.
Okay, I got a question I heard before about these unmanned aircraft that could control the border. And I got one more question, and then I'll listen to your answer. Besides the unmanned aircraft, I heard another thing. If we put jails on the border, that would also help. So what do you think of those two things?
Well, isn't it a shame, again, that you, the taxpayer, end up paying for our government's failure to secure the border? The problem starts at the border, and all of our tax dollars and our resources should be applied.
They hung up, so they'll listen on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, our resources should be applied to, first and foremost, securing that border in the name of national security and the public safety. What we need are our National Guard troops en masse supporting Border Patrol along that line and erecting vehicle barriers and fences to prevent the drugs and the criminals from entering the country and preying on American
citizens. Did you say National Guard?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's where our
National Guard belongs there, not in Iraq.
Correct.
Okay. Tom in Watsonville, you've been waiting. You are now on the air on KSCO on the Saturday special with MZ and Andy and Chris.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I've had quite a bit of experience going back and forth between Mexico and here and dealing with immigration-related issues with business and this sort of thing. And, you know, the fence, that's fine, and the border security thing is essential. But, you know, even if you could snap your fingers and have the fence built tomorrow, we don't have any means of dealing with the people that are here, and we don't have any means in place today. We really don't have any means to deal with people who have legitimate reasons to immigrate going north or south, and who have and have reasons to do that that would be beneficial to the United States. So that, you know, like right now I'm dealing with a case with somebody that's got a specialized education. They're in Mexico with our business on both sides of the border. We want to use them to go through that process, that visa process, just a visa process for a legitimate purpose. It takes months and months and months. It takes thousands and thousands of dollars. And yet that's something that's beneficial to this country. But then you get, and at the same time, if you're down there, yesterday I sat for over an hour at Tijuana trying to get across the border. I get to the border, everything's in order, and the American guy, you know, our guy, it was just the rudest, most obnoxious person you can imagine, and we're following the law. You know, we're doing what we're supposed to do, and they're presenting our documents and everything right, and these people, you know, just don't even, American citizens, and we're just treated terribly by our own people. So I just, the fence is fine, but what are you going to do with the people that are here, and what are you going to do about getting a legitimate process in place? The fence is easy, I think. I think it's the other side of it that's difficult, and I don't hear any answers on that.
Well, the caller makes some great points. I mean, it highlights the fact that it's not the immigration system that's broken. It's the entire government bureaucracy that's broken and too top-heavy. And you're right that with bringing in people, skilled labor as well as unskilled labor and even agricultural workers, there's no accountability. It takes forever to get through, to jump through the hoops legally. We need to streamline that process, make sure that not only do we know who is entering this country and for what purpose, but the most important thing is, do they leave?
Yeah.
And we have a program called U.S. Visit Program that was rolled out after September 11th. And if you've ever traveled and go through the airports and you see these little kiosks, this U.S. Visit kiosk, you're actually supposed to, when you leave the country, is to check out and sort of sign the guest book and say, I was here and now I'm leaving. Well, this system's never been implemented. It's never been started up. It's
yeah, like it when you visit a corporate business somewhere and you got to sign in and sign out.
Sign in and sign out. And,
yeah.
And so that's why I'm saying that we've had over 500,000 people that federal officials are looking for now, a manhunt, looking for people who entered the country but never left and have disappeared. So the system is broken. We need an accountability system, and that's where we need not a national ID, but we need a visitor's ID system to where we can track people. We can track them through their banking. We can track them through biometrics and know where they are, and make sure that they are then escorted out of the country.
Bank of America is about to perform a great service for us, huh? If they would share their records.
Correct. And of course, but
God, miserable bank.
By the way, what do you do with the people that are here? What are you going to do with the people that are here?
I know. That
B of A account.
Hold on just a second, gang, here. Everybody's trying to talk at once. I've got too many people on the line. Tom and Watsonville, we're done, I guess, right?
Well, my question was, but, you know, we still haven't dealt with the, you know, after you build the fence, what do you do with the people that are here and have been here
for all those years? Question for Chris.
We have laws, and we're not enforcing them. And fortunately, we're now seeing, because of the pressure that we've applied to the federal government and said, enforce the laws. If you take away the magnet, the people will have no opportunity here, and they'll return to their country of origin and hold their federal government accountable for providing them jobs that will get in line and come in legally. Enforce, you'll see attrition through enforcement. The raids that we're seeing on businesses across this country, we had two more recently, one in Massachusetts. We had one here in Arizona yesterday. We're starting to go after the businesses, And what's happening is that the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps volunteers and other civically minded people in the communities are now observing illegal activity, gathering evidence, turning it over to the federal government and says, I think this is where you can uncover some illegal activity. And
are they doing anything about it?
They are. They're sweeping people out of the businesses. They're deporting them. And guess what happens the next day? Americans line up. American citizens line up to take those jobs. Of course, the employers forced to pay them a better wage. And then it's a win-win situation.
Well, at least it's something, Watsonville Tom, don't you think?
Well, but I think the problem with that is, though, the fact of the matter is this country's looked the other way for 25 years, almost since that last immigration reform. We winked, and we let these people in, and, yeah, you could talk all you want about the law, but now what you've got is you've got a bunch of people living here that came in illegally because we let them in illegally. These people, let's face it, everybody knows how they got here, and you can say they were illegal, but we let them in. We didn't enforce the law. Now they're here. Now they got kids, maybe even grandkids at this point, who are citizens, and now you start talking all this talk about, oh, you're just going to go out and extradite these people and force them across the border. Well, morally, what do you do about these families and stuff that we let them in? We really did let them in, and now they've got citizens. You've got a mix of citizens and non-citizens and families. How do you deal with that morally? I don't think you could just say, stick the parents on the bus and extradite them or whatever you call it, and now you got a bunch of kids who are American citizens over here. You're going to kick them out too? How do you deal with that?
Yes, again, you're highlighting the mess that our federal government has created. Certainly, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't have our animosity is not toward the people who come and lived a good life, have not engaged in any criminal activity other than the administrative crimes that they've committed. And they do have families. I'm willing to make an exception for those who have families here.
Okay.
Two things need to happen. First, you need to cut off the flood. You need to secure the border and stop it. And then you need to redefine the 14th Amendment and say, look, no longer can you come here for the purpose of having a child and then take advantage of our system. Those are two things that need to happen.
Okay.
Take away the attraction.
Right.
And the social services that people get because of coming here and having a child. And then those who don't have families are going to have to leave.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, I just wanted to hear where you're going to come down on that, because there is there's a legal component, a moral component, and sometimes people don't connect them. But I like to hear you say that.
Tom.
Why punish the people who we allowed to break the law?
Right.
I agree.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Tom. Andy, you wanted to say something? Or did you forget?
No, I didn't. I'm enjoying the conversation. First, Chris, I think you need to point fingers not just at the federal government, but the American people. You see, we elect the kind of people we deserve. It's not just the federal government. We put these officials in place. We elect them. We're getting what we deserve.
Yeah, Sam Farr ran on a platform of being against NAFTA in 1994, and he turned out to be the deciding vote, that voted for NAFTA. He did a complete switch over. Andy is absolutely right, because Sam has run several times after that, after he turned on the very people he represented, and the people he represented that he turned on continued to reelect him. I don't understand it.
It seems that the only voice you have is with your vote, and you're conned into making a vote for someone, but then you have no one lobbying for your position after that. However, the corporate interest and those behind NAFTA who are going to make egregious profits off of exploiting people, they have the lobbying vote and the pressure that they can apply once that person goes to Washington, D.C. I've been there. I spend time lobbying myself.
Maybe our system just plain doesn't work. Anyhow, let's go to Ann on the cell phone at the Santa Cruz flea market. You're on, Ann.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to say that I have a friend who works in the Hispanic community, and this really did happen. A couple came here with five children illegally from a very remote village. She got pregnant. At 28 weeks, they put her in Stanford Hospital with twins. And when they released her from the hospital and only released one child to them because they already had five, the bill to us as taxpayers was $5 million that we paid. And I totally agree that they're breaking the law, And the thing is that if they don't change the Constitution, that if you are not a citizen and you have a child, that child is a citizen of the country you come for. I mean, the medical and the education and all the benefits we are giving these people are ludicrous. And I am not prejudiced against one race. I don't care if you're from China or from Russia. If you're here illegally, we don't take as good a care of our own people as we do these people who come here and break the law.
Yeah.
And that's all I want.
That's a great point. We have a national health care system, but unfortunately, only if you're illegally in this country do you benefit from it, with no questions asked and no cost to you, that cost is tacked on to we, the taxpayer.
I did just want to wait one more statement. They keep saying, well, we can't put, you know, on the border, we can't put anybody else except the real, you know, immigration people because of the training. How much training does it take to ask someone, pardon me, can I see your birth certificate? Can I see your papers? And if you don't have any, then just send them back or jail them. And that's all I'm going to say. Thank you.
Thank you for saying it. That was Ann on a cell phone at the Santa Cruz Flea Market. 39 minutes past 10 a.m. on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. This is the Saturday special. My name is MZ. We've got Chris Simcox, who's with the Minuteman Border Fence Project. And we've got Andy Anderson. We got you, the callers. And by the way, if you want to give us a call and become part of the conversation, now's a great time to do so. The phone number is 479-1080. 479-1080. You know, we don't use the fax very much, but if you want to fax us, the fax number is 475-2967. The area code for both of those numbers is 831. And we're going to be on the air right up until noontime, although Chris can't be with us beyond the first hour here. We have something else scheduled, sort of fun, next hour that we've never done before. So, if you want to talk about this particular issue, you've got about another 20 minutes to call in. Let's go to our next caller now, Chili Bob in Salinas Valley, who's a farmer. Chili Bob, you're on the air.
Thank you, MZ.
Why are you called Chili Bob?
Well, it's my nickname. I cook a lot of chili.
Okay. Can I have some? I love chili.
You got it. It's hard to argue with Ann. She made some really good points. I know Tom. Tom's a friend of mine. I farm about 50 miles from him, but
Watsonville Tom,
but you know what, and the crux of this whole thing, I think what Tom was trying to say too, besides just the moral issue, but I can't remember, was Chris or Andy mentioned that when you take the illegal workers away, Americans are there to fill the jobs? No, not in agriculture, they're not. It's unfortunate. We wish they would, but it's a sad state of affairs, but it's a fact of life that these people were the only ones, and most of these people that are coming across the border illegally are here for one reason only, and that's to get a better life, to work and then go back. And it's unfortunate they're getting the mix in with the mix with the ones that are here for the crime reasons and the other things. But there's some really, really, really good people that are coming from across the border illegally to go to work and do the work that the American citizens are just blatantly just too lazy to do. They won't come out and do it. And the minimum wage, as you well know, is rising in California. Every year it's going up and up and up. And maybe it's not a stellar minimum wage, but for the most part, in mechanized ag here in the Salinas Valley, we're paying well above minimum wage. And we can't afford to pay any more, especially in the light of all the expenses we've got with food safety and everything else. We're getting squeezed into a corner that we're getting a heck of a time getting out of. And we need that ag jobs bill. We need it in the worst way. We need guest worker programs to be able to get people over here and track them, get them here, get them back, and then don't let them milk the system like Andy's
talking
about. Bob,
who's the good guy in Congress on that?
Unfortunately, I've been a Republican all my life, but I'm thinking about changing parties because of that. Republicans are very, very tough on this, and they refuse to listen to us. And it's
is there a good guy in Congress who's a Democrat? Who is it?
I really don't know, but I know that Farr is on our side. That's the only time I've ever agreed with him on anything. But Feinstein, I believe. But it's even sad that the American Farm Bureau you know, which we're all members here of the Farm Bureau, California Farm Bureau, they won't even listen to us. They don't think it's a necessity that the ag jobs built. It's scary that our own industry is not supporting us in the heartland of the country. The smaller, you know, more intense agriculture programs that we have here are a lot more labor intensive than they are in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Everything's mechanized back there. We're here. We're trying, but we can't mechanize everything.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. We appreciate it.
Michael, if I may jump in.
Harold and Aptos is next, but go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, when I was in elementary school, there was a program, I think it was called the Bracero program.
I can't
program.
Hear anything.
Just stand by, Harold. Go ahead, Andy.
Sorry. There was a program where Mexicans came across the border. I think it was called the Bracero program. I'm not sure. One of my best friends is Luis Portillo. And he would come to school at 8 in the morning until noon, and then he went to work in the fields with his family. And it was my understanding, because I didn't have a very big perception of the world in those days, it was a pretty successful program. I don't understand why there's so much trouble in trying to incorporate a worker guest program.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't agree more. There are many parts of our economy where there is a labor shortage, where Americans do... There are not enough Americans to take many jobs, especially in the agricultural business. But the problem is with the ag bills, and it's not Republicans. Republicans are trying to hold the line because so many Democrats want to tack on amendments and other things onto this ag bill, which increase the benefits to illegal aliens in this country, rather than just sticking to the fact that let's come up with a guest worker program, let's have a biometric ID card.
Maybe that's why Farr is for it. Yeah, you know, the last caller couldn't, the farmer, Bob, couldn't understand why he agreed with Farr, but maybe that's the reason.
Well, and conservatives realize that the national security threat and the public safety issues must come first, and you can't vote for a bill if it's going to weaken national security and further jeopardize the public safety. You want workers coming in who've been through a medical background check, a criminal background check, and that we know where they're going to work and that they are returning home. And one of the ways you do that is hold part of their income in an escrow account and make it be an incentive for them to actually leave by when they check out at the kiosk going south, then they get the percentage of their wages back to them. Now it's so much more beneficial to come in and work for a while. Many of them just disappear from these jobs and end up somewhere else in America filling another job and living in the shadows because it's so much easier than doing it the right way.
Sure. Hey, Chris, let's see. A caller called in to say the congressman that wants to close the border is Tom Tancredo. I think we know that, but do you know what Tom Tancredo's position is on the guest worker program? Because that's
Tom
what
Tancredo
I was specifically talking about.
Is basically against the guest worker program and for this reason, and he makes some very cogent points. Wouldn't it be better, again, we have a guest worker program that has been tried around the world in many countries. The problem is that we don't have the guts to kick people out when they then violate the agreement that we make with them. And like I said, it's so easy for them to disappear in the shadows of America and take advantage of all of the good graces that we provide for them in our social system. Let's increase legal immigration because we want to attract people who desire to become American citizens, not who just want to come here and make a buck and return
home.
Yeah,
right.
We would rather increase legal immigration, as Mr. Tancredo says, and then those folks that come in are directed into those sectors of the labor market where there's a shortage, and they'll fill those jobs. Their children, they'll have children, they'll be Americans, they'll assimilate, they'll learn to speak English, and that makes a good American citizen. Not someone who comes in here and realizes that they're not held accountable and that, again, that they don't desire to become American citizens.
Right. Okay, let's try to get Harold and Aptos on the line here. He's an expert in immigration and so forth. Harold, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
You hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Okay, Chris, I'm a proud Minuteman and also a son of liberty and a historian. So it helps to read the history of Mexico, and when people use the race card against us to realize that there are cultures that have bad blood between them, such as the Hutus and the Tutsis in this world today, or the Chinese, the Mongols, I'm sure the Poles, the Germans, The Israelis and the Jews have had bad blood historically. We've had two wars with Mexico. So you racists out there using the Johnny Cochran race card against us, take that. Point two, I lived in Watsonville, California. The Latino invasion hit the ag fields, the ag towns first. But California is so huge, Chris. Hundreds of thousands of cities and unincorporated areas where if you're non-ag, you don't deal with Latinos except in small numbers. So you don't understand what's going on. And we noticed it here because in 1989, we had a huge earthquake in California. It was 7.2 on the Richter scale. And that right after that is when I noticed Watsonville went from 8% Latino to 75% Latino in 2 years. And these people were never seen walking the streets in the 41 years I was there. That's when I was wondering what's going on. To answer the farmer and this ag bill, what's happening is the Latinos that are taking the jobs in the fields are moving into construction, they're moving into hospitals, anybody that will hire them, and leaving the field. Farmer, who is stealing your tractors and millions of dollars full of your pipes at night? The Latinos that have come in. Don't tell me they're all here to assimilate. Also, President Bush is down in South America now trying to be an alternative to Hugo Chavez. And Hugo Chavez says, Presidente Gringo, get out of Latin America. And we're racist, huh?
Okay.
And the last point, I have two more quick points. Can I get them in?
Go ahead, real quick.
Okay, quickly. Okay, La Manzana are trying to assimilate the Latinos in Watsonville, and they're trying to teach them English. But what they're doing, they're teaching the Mixtec Indians Spanish only because, quote, Spanish is the only language in agriculture, despite English being the official language of the United States.
Wow.
And the last one is a reporter for the Monterey Herald wrote this week, California is part of Mexico and always will be. She brings up an incident where three Latinos killed a white constable in the early parts of the Republic, and she says, it's all the Latinos' fault because we're treated so badly, and this is in 1859. She doesn't get it that three people killed a white cop, and, of course, the Latino border guards, what happened? They were thrown in jail for trying to enforce the law where the president...
Okay, Harold, I think we get the point. We want to move on to our next caller now. That's Don, who is a new caller. We love new callers. Don, are you really a new caller?
Yes.
Good.
You know, I think it would be great if you could have someone on the show or call in or a guest who understands the laws relating historically to what is a citizen. It's my understanding that there's an old law, 100 or more years old, and or it was litigated in the U.S. courts that then dealt with the status of American slaves. And it determined that, or through the law or the court decision, that they had citizenship. Those that were born here are citizens. I don't believe the Constitution of the U.S. in any way defines that a woman here from Mexico sneaking in or on vacation has a child, that child is a U.S. citizen. That status...
I don't think it specifically says that, and I don't know, but I believe... It's common knowledge or common belief that if you're born in this country, you're a citizen of this country.
That's true, but that's not as a result of the Constitution. It's a result of an interpretation of law or from the courts dealing with the status of slaves.
Wow.
I'm not an expert, obviously, but I think there are people who know the history of how we came to recognizing that somebody from Europe... At JFK Airport, having a baby, that baby's a U.S. citizen, or on vacation here, or sneaking in illegally. There's got to be someone out there who understands how we came to this.
Maybe that person is calling on line four now. So the party who was ringing in on line four, I think there's a very good chance that we'll get an answer to your question.
Yeah, the other thing is, I think we ought to get somebody on the air or a guest to speak to Prop 187. One federal judge. Yeah. Marilyn Hall Patel negated the will of the people.
Uh-huh.
And Prop 187, which was overwhelmingly supported, denying benefits to illegal aliens needs to go to the Supreme Court and let the country put the Supreme Court on the witness stand and tell us what its logic is for either enforcing California's Prop 187 or confirming that it should not be implemented, and let Americans witness that process. But we've allowed Prop 187 to sit in the dustbin somewhere.
Right.
In a limbo status.
That's a great I've wondered about that myself. Hey, well, new caller Don, thank you for your new call.
Well, one last comment.
Okay.
You want to talk about how we deport and deal with all those that are here. It's very simple. They self-deport when they don't receive driver's licenses, educational or medical benefits. They will leave, or jobs. They will leave. Then you deal with what's left in however manner you want to deal with it. But the self-deportation process will occur and cure the largest portion of this problem. And the only ultimate way we fix it is to force Mexico to deal with the people that come back across their border and force their corrupt government to be more democratic. You got to put Mexico on the hot seat.
Wow.
And we're not doing that because we're cowards.
How was it you never called here before?
I can't get through.
Oh, okay.
I have to wait for people like Harold.
Oh.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it said on the screen that he is sick and tired of listening to Harold. But
Don makes some great points. I mean, this is
he
about
sure
the 14th
did.
Amendment.
He sure
and,
did.
And the 14th Amendment now has been hijacked and by a group of people who are going to use anything they can to dupe the American people into thinking that this right. is against the law, or that if you do have a child. Listen, I get letters from legal immigrants all the time who say, you know, I've been deported and sent back. And I have children here, and they packed up my child. I'm from Russia, and they deported all of us. And my child was born here. They don't consider it. There's selective enforcement or selective definition of what makes it a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
And I think that does need to go to the Supreme Court. I think there needs to be a national debate in redefining the 14th Amendment, which was about making slaves citizens. And it has nothing in any way does it mean that if you sneak across the border for the purpose of having a baby, and so that you get to stay and receive our tax-funded benefit, that's where the criminal activity takes place. That's fraud.
Sure. Okay, Donald from the Perspectives Program, which is up next at 12 noon, says that it's true that anyone born here is a citizen. He also says it's written that way in the Constitution. Roy in Carmel, Sal in Monterey, Carl in Aptos, Mike in Watsonville, and Eric in Freedom. Thanks for waiting. We've got some commercials to run now. I guess we'll spill a little bit over into the next hour here. So stay tuned. We got to run these spots. So take it away, Dave.
Your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie of Direct Electric.
And I'm Dave Christie. Whether your problem is a light switch, breaker box, meter main, or anything in between, Direct Electric technicians will fix it right the first time for the right price. And here's the best part. Direct Electric will not bill you for a service call.
I don't think they heard you, Dave. You better tell them again.
Okay. Direct Electric will not charge you for a service call.
And if you have an electrical emergency, call Direct Electric at 425-1407. I'll rouse Dave and he'll come running.
Priscilla is right. If you have a real electrical emergency, the kind that just can't wait till morning, call Direct Electric and we will come running.
Remember, your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. I will take your call.
And I will make certain that your problem gets fixed. Call Direct Electric at 425-1407. That's 425-1407.
Life's good at the beach. Hello, I'm Joe Criccio, owner of Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz, where life is good. One reason why life is so good at Beach Auto Sales is that we save you money, a lot of money, on the best pre-owned cars, trucks, and vans you'll find anywhere, like Beach Auto's Deal of the Week. Listen to this.
Save $10,000 on a 2006 Mazda MPV with only 13,000 miles. Comes with a four-year, 50,000-mile factory warranty, two available for only $16,989.
Save money on your next car, truck, or van. Make a quick trip to see Joe Criqueo at Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz. Located down by the beach where life's good, I'm at 512 Pacific Avenue. And hey, if you're having a special car or truck in mind, give me a ring. I'll find it for you. I'm Joe Criqueo, owner of Beach Auto Sales. 4200-200. That's right. My phone number is 4200-200. 4200-200.
Life's good at the beach.
Okay, we're back on the closing minutes of hour number one of the Saturday special. Roy and Carmel, you're on the air. Go.
Yes, I think this whole issue is another shining example of the creeping fascism in our government. I looked up what fascism was I heard about it, but I never really knew what it was. And according to the dictionary, it's where business interests take over and operate a government for their own interests, to essentially take it from the people. And I've observed this problem for many years. I tried to go work in the lettuce fields when I was in high school, and that was quite a while ago. But the whole change in labor in this country is encouraged by the business interests that profit from it. And that's why all the things that seem reasonable about labor forces coming from the South are not gone through with, because it's much easier to leave the borders open. And that way, all labor, the competition between the people who live here and the new people who are desperate to make money, reduces the labor cost. Here in town, I noticed as early as 7 years ago, half the labor force was pale faces, you know, local boys doing construction. Now 90% is Mexican people.
Right. It's true.
There's a reason why all the meat processing plants are all Mexican.
Roy, that's it, unfortunately, because we're at the end of the hour.
Okay.
This is KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. It's 11 a.m. We'll be back in 6 minutes.
Fox News Radio. I'm Rod Fritz. President Bush meeting with the president of Uruguay. Stop two of his five-nation visit to Latin America as Hugo Chavez continues his anti-U.S. rants.
Asked point blank if he's concerned about the Venezuelan president, the U.S. president described his mission here as
quiet and effective diplomacy. Diplomacy all aimed at helping people.
After his meeting with Uruguayan President Vasquez, President Bush said the big bilateral issue here is trade, with the U.S. willing to reduce or eliminate tariffs.
We just want to make sure there's market access for our products.
An example, he says, blueberries. They grow a lot of them here. Now the question is, will they get to sell them in the U.S.? With the president in Montevideo, Uruguay, Rich Johnson, Fox News Radio.
An international conference in Baghdad focusing on stability in Iraq, but also an historic meeting of diplomats between Iran and the United States.
The U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, said in a briefing after today's conference that Iranian and U.S. delegations did indeed have direct talks, but that these discussions were all in the presence of other people and they centered on the topic of Iraq.
Fox's Clarissa Ward in Baghdad. Police in Lubbock, Texas, say a woman posing as a medical worker has kidnapped a three-day-old infant from a hospital.
This terrifying baby snatching happened right in front of the baby's mother and hospital staff early this morning. A woman posing as a hospital employee pretended to take that infant out of her mother's room for medical tests.
Fox's Laura Engel. Police and hospital officials say there is concern over the infant's health. An Amber Alert has been issued. Word now that a 10th person has died as a result of injuries from that Bronx, New York fire on Wednesday. Funerals for 9 victims, 8 of them children, will be held on Monday. The owner of the Yankees, George Steinbrenner, helping out with expenses. This is Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Nothing inspires imagination like reading. When you open a book, you can explore new worlds. Like the ones in the Chronicles of Narnia.
It's a beaver.
I ain't gonna smell it if that's what you want.
It's a talking beaver. Impossible.
You can make new friends, discover amazing adventures, and most of all, have fun.
Are you prepared for what awaits you?
To find out more about the wonders of reading, you can visit the Library of Congress website at www.loc.gov. There, you can learn more about books, play fun games, discover cool facts, and so much more. You can log on to www.loc.gov and let your journey begin. This message has been brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
North Korea is warning it will retaliate if the United States does not keep its promise to lift sanctions against that communist regime.
The warning came from Pyongyang's chief nuclear negotiator Kim Ki-kwon. South Korea's Yonhap news agency quoted him as saying if the U.S. failed to solve the issue completely, the North would take action against it. It didn't say what North Korea would do, but the U.S. and its Asian allies listened closely to what Pyongyang has to say following its nuclear weapons test last year. Following a landmark meeting last week, the U.S. agreed to begin talks on the lifting of financial sanctions against the communist regime. It's part of a larger deal to try to end Pyongyang's nuclear weapons ambitions. In the Asia Bureau, David Piper, Fox News Radio.
State of Kentucky is one step closer to raising the speed limit.
Kentucky drivers might soon be driving down the highway a bit faster. The state Senate approving a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit, up from 65 for most highways and parkways, but it still needs to be approved by the governor. They've sent him the bill, and the state transportation department needs to sign off on it as well, once engineers double-check safety factors. Ken Duffy, Fox News Radio.
A public admission about his personal life, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich says he had an affair at the same time he was investigating former President Bill Clinton over the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Gingrich talked to Dr. James Dobson on the Focus on the Family radio show.
That was not an easy thing for him to do, to go on a national audience like that and admit the most embarrassing thing in your life. But he did it, and I appreciate his willingness to speak with candor. There.
That's Gingrich was a key player in impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton. She was one of the Angels of Bataan, Jean Schmidt, an Army nurse held prisoner for over 3 years during World War II on the Philippines, died at her home in California. She was 88 years old. I'm Rod Fritz, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You are tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, March 10th, 2007. Today, you can expect clouds and sun. High should be around 67 degrees with winds north-northwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, you can expect some clouds with lows around 50 degrees. Wind should be light and variable. Tomorrow will be sunny with some cloudy intervals. High should be around 75 degrees. And tomorrow night will be partly cloudy with lows around 51 degrees. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today. West winds 10 knots with wind waves up to 1 foot and a northwest swell 3 to 7 feet at 12 seconds. Coming up next, hour number two of the Saturday special with your host MZ right here on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. Enjoy the show.
Stretch of our discussion of illegal immigration and our visit with Chris Simcox, but there's more.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
And welcome to hour number two of the Saturday special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. My name is MZ. We've got Sal in Monterey, Carl in Aptos, Eric in Freedom, and Donald here in the studio. Donald is in the studio. Yeah, go ahead, Donald. You wanted to create.
I just wanted to create a correction. The 14th Amendment was being misinterpreted. You can only become an American citizen if you were a slave. In other words. The 14th Amendment is being misused and abused. It's being misinterpreted. These people that are coming into the country and having children here, the 14th Amendment does not apply to them. They can't come in here and have a child and expect it to be an American citizen.
All right. Hey, thanks for making that clear. Appreciate your input here. And we'll be hearing from you next hour on your Perspectives program here on AM 1080 KSCO. Now, want to get back with Chris, who's got a blast off here in just a minute. Chris Simcox, thanks for being with us for the last hour. We appreciate it and wish you the best in your endeavors with your organization.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been an intriguing conversation. Yeah, obviously, you have a lot of people out there that are serious about resolving this issue, and it starts on the border. It starts with starting a Minuteman Civil Defense Corps chapter and holding our elected officials accountable.
You want to give a website or a phone number if anybody wants to get in touch with you?
You bet. That's www.MinutemanHQ.com. Minuteman, singular, HQ is in headquarters.com. You click on the California State Directory, and you can find the chapter in your area, or contact us through the information there and start a chapter in your community. We'd like to have one in every congressional district or around the country and hold them accountable in their home district as we, the voters, can make a difference by paying attention to who we elect and watching how they act.
Okay. Well, Chris, thanks again. We're going to give Eric and Freedom, Carl and Aptos and Sal and Monterey their say because they've been waiting a long time. Then we'll move on to our other topic. But, again, thanks for being with us.
Great. My pleasure.
Best of luck to you. Take care. Okay, Sal in Monterey. Oh, you know what? Hey, Sal.
Yes.
Wait a minute, okay?
Okay.
Because Eric and Freedom has actually been waiting 27 minutes here, so let's go to this. The right thing to do is to put Eric and Freedom on. Go ahead, Eric, you're on. Hello, Eric.
Eric, yes.
Okay, you're on. Eric, you're on.
Okay, the reluctance of the government to build a fence is quite obvious. The North American Union is already in place, and NAFTA's superhighway is being built in Texas. If you think the government's going to fiddle around building a fence when they've already decided to build a superhighway through the United States to Canada to allow Mexicans to travel on an international highway, then that's the reason they're not going to build a fence.
Okay. Thanks very much for your addition here to the Saturday special. Sal and Monterey, you're on.
Okay, hi guys. I hope you're having a good day. I have an interesting situation where I work. I'm in the construction industry, and one thing is true. Most of the people immigrating into the United States from our southern border are not coming here for the jobs we don't want. They know that there's no enforcement, and they're coming here for construction jobs. And there's a number of illegal aliens, and it's obvious, and they totally admit who they are, and they're making the same money as we are. And not only that, but there's one... he's a Mexican gentleman, but he is an American citizen, and he's running crews of illegal aliens around town. And Friday it was a bit disconcerting when we're all getting our paychecks, but throughout the day he's having paychecks delivered to him from other contractors because he has other crews working on jobs. He's charging money on top of their money, and it's just not fair. I'm not against immigration, and these guys are all hard workers, and they're great guys, as a matter of fact. But they need to play by the same rules, and they're not being forced to play by the same rules, and even giving them the opportunity to play by the same rules won't work either, because they're not going to do it until they're forced to do it. And I'm just wondering if you guys have any ideas of how we should approach this problem, because I've talked to police officers. They seem to feel that there's nothing they can do about it, and I don't know what to do either. Maybe you guys can help me.
I can't.
That's everybody's answer, and it's
maybe
really bothering me.
Maybe Carl and Aptos can.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. You know, when they started, by the way, great show, and Chris, that's great to have someone that's articulate, informed, and intelligent dealing with this. Cause,
well, yeah, Chris has left, but he's great. Yeah, he had to leave.
Thanks, Michael, for the show.
Sure.
People might want to take a look on the web, something called MS-13. It's a gang from El Salvador. There's over 10,000 in the U.S., very, very violent, and the FBI has a special unit working on that. Now, something that really positive that's happening is that right now immigration is looking at prisons, and they're looking at guys that are in prisons that are here illegally. And that's a great start. You already got the guys captured. You know they're criminals, and pulling them out. So anyway, My idea is that a triage, like they do for crisis situations, like in emergency rooms, when you have a terrible thing that happens, you have to see what do you do, you know, what levels do you do in acting on things. And the number one level is, I think, is crime, potential terrorism. And then you got things on commerce. That might be the second one as far as abusing welfare situations or abusing things with work. And then the third one might be culture, you know, where if it's a bad thing, the device of the culture, it's good to have the mixing and so on. It's an awesome thing, and that's the way America's always been. But if you have a thing where you get like the French in Canada, where you almost split the country apart, or you get the balkanization, that's what you don't want. So anyway, that's the three things I think in the triage. Take care of the crime, and then the commerce issues, which include welfare, and then finally culture, where you're including people as a part of the culture, but you're not getting balkanization.
Okay. Thank you, Sal. Thank you, Carl. Hey, that's going to wrap it up. Mike in Watsonville, sorry, we didn't promise that we would get you on. It's nothing personal. We got to end this because we have another guest that we was scheduled to go on at the beginning of the hour, and so we've got to do that here. Here, let's get that guest here. Let's see, how do I do this? Here, we go, call out. Yeah, what?
Isn't right about now a good time for KZ's commentary?
Sure, do that. That's fine, okay?
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
My recent two commentaries dealt with a suggestion that clearly Islamic terrorism must be dealt with for many years to come. Therefore, the draft should now be resurrected. That news generated strong, sometimes hysterical reaction by some listeners. So let's pursue this issue further. Foolish me, I took a risk and thought I was talking to an audience of Americans who were very aware of the present danger to our freedom and way of life and could see that it is okay for each of us to care enough to participate in the preservation of our own national safety. It's wrong to expect a voluntary military to do it all indefinitely for the rest of us. If we were asked to serve in some capacity, I thought most would agree. Guess what? I was initially wrong, and then after a while, I was right. One proverb keeps haunting me as a reaction to the negative emotion, universal military preparedness. Quote, as you sow, so shall you reap, unquote. The permissive generations of the past 40 years chose to not discipline their children, to never say no to them, to be overly protective of their emotional well-being, and those parents created a grave disservice to their children, many of whom are totally self-absorbed and selfish. Even more important, they, the children, were cheated out of the sense of joint responsibility and loyalty. Many listeners who at first were angry at the mention of the draft thought about it and decided that, after all, it would help our nation and our own self-worth to participate in our national military preparedness. And our able-bodied young people would then have a personal reason to love and protect their national home. Even the man who called a local program and threatened to move to Poland with his son in the event of a draft, I honestly believe would finally agree to stay and participate in our own defense. By way of emails and voicemails to me and other local programs, this topic has brought up many other creative ways of serving our country. Very appealingly, especially to conscientious objectors, working in forestry, road building, housing for the poor, dealing with pollution, etc., were mentioned by the same listeners who at first were angry about the draft. Also mentioned was the fairness of a lottery along with the draft. All of these suggestions are wonderful. And best of all, instead of remaining mildly interested critical spectators of whatever our elected officials decide to do about terrorism, we all could be personally invested and we all would be stronger. the final thought, it's good to be willing to look at and confront unpopular situations, which in the final analysis brings us together and surely would help to conquer the evil in our midst, because in unity there is strength. I have a good warm feeling because this has been a moment in time when the best came out of those who confronted their own inner fears and selves, and responsibility to their fellow Americans prevailed. If we remain on this track instead of being mired in political divisiveness, without a doubt we will eventually conquer the enemy and be safe and home free. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Case Verline.
Okay, thank you. That's a great commentary, but it's been running. That's not the current. It's not the current one, but we'll get that up another time or something. So, Dave, do we have the special fanfare music that we used last hour?
We do.
Okay, you want to put that on?
I will.
Oh, what a guy here! What a guy! I don't know if this has been promoed. What we're going to do now? I know Rosie did a promo. Okay. And with that, we introduce Ann Parker, the food critic.
I think it would have been more appropriate to use food, glorious food, hot chocolate and mustard.
Well, shucks. I mean, you know, we didn't. All right. If we do a regular segment, we'll have something like
that.
No,
that was great. I really enjoyed that.
So I'll bet you must really enjoy being a food critic. I mean, that's what I would say. I heard a podcast on the SantaCruzSentinel.com website a few weeks ago, and it was an interview. Wallace Bain was interviewing you.
Yes.
And some during part of that interview, you said that you don't like it. You don't want people to know that you're who you are. Because you want them to behave as they normally would. If I were a food critic, I would insist on everybody. I mean, I would call them ahead of time and saying, MZ is going to be coming to critique your food and your place and your operation. And so you better impress the hell out of him.
That sounds good, doesn't it? The trouble is, though, and as you say, that would be a really, really nice thing. But what I'm trying to do is to let people know, let the public out there know, just like you do with your job, about things that are going on and what's what. And so I don't want it to be slanted. I don't want to get extra special service or extra.
Oh, I would. I definitely would. So look, if I get to be a food critic for if no one will hire me to be a food critic for some publication, maybe I can hire myself to be the KSCO food critic.
That's not a bad idea.
And then
actually.
I could just you know, do it my, and that way you and I won't clash.
You know what some people do is sometimes publications will do profiles where the restaurant owner does know that the person is there specifically to do a profile to be published about the restaurant, in which case, you know, everything's out in the open and they can give you as many treats as possible. So maybe you need to go the profile route.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't care what you call it, as long as they treat me extra specially.
It's funny, you know, there's some restaurants where you get that extra stuff anyway. Like last year, I guess about a year ago, I did a review of Theo's in SoCal, which, you know, as you know, is one of the best restaurants in the county.
I have never been to Theo's.
You've got to go. You've got to go. And if you choose, they have a thing called, I think it's called a chef's choice. And it's a 5-course meal. You know, it's all included, fixed price meal. You get 5 courses. But the chef there, Nikki Tripp, he's such a trip. He really is. He has a great name for what he does. He's very generous, and he gave us 2 extra courses, and he didn't know who we were.
Are you sure he didn't know who
Absolutely.
You were? I'll bet he did.
Absolutely, because the people at the table next to us were having the same meal, and they got the same treatment.
You know, it's true. I suppose, did you rave about it?
I did.
Oh, okay, that's probably why. So I believe that he didn't know who you were.
Yes.
Because when I rave about things, no one knows who I am, because I have a great face for radio and nothing else by design. I mean, so
who said that? Who originally said great face for radio?
Is that Yogi Berra?
Doesn't it sound like a Yogi Berra kind of a thing?
Might have been.
Yeah.
Might have been. I just don't know. But I do know that when I rave about something, whether I'm at someone's house being fed or at a restaurant, chances are the people that made it, that I'm complimenting, are going to feed me some more of it or something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's like, oh, but I didn't rave about it until I was actually writing the review. At the time, no.
Oh.
I tend to not say a whole lot.
Well, that's really neat. So we should polish off this hour by doing what we have never done before, and that is, you know, talk about great places to eat, right, in our own listening area, right?
Wonderful
and so
idea.
Who would know better than that about that than you?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Everybody knows. We all eat. We all have opinions. I get some of my best food tips from people I meet, you know, in the doctor's waiting room or, you know, strolling down the street or whatever. Everyone has ideas about places to go. In fact,
do you just walk up to someone and say, what's your favorite place to eat?
Well, you know how you start chatting sometimes. I actually was at a party one time, and we were talking about restaurants and so on. It was pretty early when I was starting to do this and have it public about 3 years ago. And we started talking about Mexican food. And somebody in the group said, oh, my goodness, have you ever been to Fiesta Tepa Sorolla in I don't know if that's how you pronounce it correctly, but in Watsonville. And I said, no, what's it like? And they told me. I went. It is one of my most favorite restaurants ever. And it's a little, kind of a not very fancy place near Main Street in Watsonville. They have just extraordinary dishes. In addition to the regular dishes that you'd find in Mexican restaurants, they also have celebratory meals like shrimp in rose petal sauce and squash blossom enchiladas and things that you would find, things that would even be hard to find in Mexico.
Oh, my gosh.
It is a wonderful place. You've never been there.
No, I haven't, and I want to go.
And I don't know if you're a beer drinker, Michael, but they also bring out like a big old galvanized tub of beer jammed down into ice.
On occasion, I will consume a tub of beer on rare occasion.
Well, you got to go to this place.
Fiesta really what? Wonderful. How do you what Fiesta what?
Well, the first word's Fiesta,
yeah.
And then the second two words are the names of two towns that the family originates from in Mexico. One is Tepa, T-E-P-A, and the second one, I cannot pronounce it. It's or spell it. It's like S-A-H-U-A-Y-O, something like that. But if you remember the word Fiesta and Tepa, you will be able to find it in the phone book.
Okay.
Very nice family. The Rivas family runs it. Often my favorite restaurants are run by families. So there's a sense of investment, background, family recipes. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about going in and checking out restaurants.
And how in the world did you get into this? I mean, you were in charge of PR for the Boardwalk at one point, weren't
Forever.
You?
Forever.
Yeah, for a long
no,
time.
No, it was a great job. I was there for 13 years. I was the PR director and the community relations director.
Then what happened?
But I was a journalist prior to that.
Oh.
And I had done reviewing of theater and films and a couple of restaurant reviews. Then I started doing restaurant profiles for the Metro, actually. And then the Sentinel sort of stole me away. They said, we really would like to have a regular restaurant reviewer, you know, doing a review every other week. Would you consider doing it? And I wasn't quite sure at first that I wanted to have much of a commitment.
Uh-huh.
But once I started doing it, I found out two things. One, it was fun. And two, it was really hard. It's very, very hard to write about food, to be imaginative and to be fair and to express positive criticism and not be mean. So I liked the fact that it was challenging, and I also very much enjoyed being able to see the restaurants. Now, the 10 pounds I've gained in the last 4 years, I'm not happy about that.
You've gained 10 pounds?
I have.
Does that bring you up to normal size? Or
no.
Because you were a little slender before?
It's a little generous. It's a little generous. I also had foot surgery. You know, I'll use that as an excuse, too.
Oh.
I had lack of exercise and additional food. But it's not that I eat that much. It's more that I'm always thinking about food.
Uh-huh.
And like most people, I really enjoy food. I mean, I think we have to make ourselves not enjoy food, which is how a lot of people diet.
Yeah, like use three fingers or something.
The whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's fun. What are some of your favorite restaurants, Michael? I love to hear this.
Where do I like to go? No, it's okay. It's okay because I started this, okay?
Okay, you did.
Well, one restaurant that's missing, that no longer exists, is Manoff's Rancho Burger, where they used to have three-way chili.
Yep.
And did you ever have that?
I never did, but I heard
about
it.
I mean, it's so good. Now, Tom Manoff, I think, still lives in the area, you know, and his family. And so maybe I can verify that and pay him a lot of money to release that recipe since they're not, you know, in business anymore.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
But what it was fabulous spaghetti, and it was spaghetti that was sort of cooked in some sort of a light, very, very light tomato-y thing, because it wasn't saucy or anything, but it had a tomato-y red color to the spaghetti, and it wasn't mushy, it was al dente. And it was put on a platter, and then they had this chili, this beanless chili. It was just meat, straight meat chili that they ladled on top of that, and then they put grated fresh cheddar on top of everything. It was the perfect combination. I'm just is your radio wet, ladies and gentlemen? My microphone is just. I've drooled all over it, and I think it might get through the airwaves.
It sounds like you maybe need to bring that dish back. Yeah. And what about some existing restaurants? Where do you – and this – you know, when people – one of the most common things for people to ask me is, what's your favorite restaurant, which is impossible, because there's so many different types.
Right.
But when I try to get people to talk to me about restaurants, I'll say, you know, where's the place that you go a lot?
Yeah.
And I'll say, where's somewhere you go for special occasions? And that sort of inspires them to go, oh, yeah, well, we go to, you know, Chevy's a lot. Chevy's a lot. But for special occasions, we go to Ma Maison in Aptos, which, by the way, is a great, great little restaurant. A wonderful little romantic, very, very French, but with a nice, light California twist. I would highly recommend. It's not easy to find. You have to kind of get off on the Rio Del Mar exit and wind around a little bit, but it is worth finding that restaurant.
And what's it called? Spell it, please.
It's the words for French for my house. Ma, M-A.
Oh, M-A.
And then Maison, M-A-I-S-O-N, Ma Maison. Run, again, by a wonderful couple. She's from Aptos. He is French. He trained with a French master chef, which is the level of French chef very high. And he has this wonderful accent. His first name is Lionel. And I asked him to spell it. He said, you know, Lionel, like the train.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I was charmed completely. And he comes sometimes and we'll talk to the diners after they finish. Very charming, lovely, romantic, but also casual enough that you could just go by yourself or with a friend. It's not stuffy at all. And the food is wonderful.
I have never had a bad. I've only had superior meals at Severino's at the Seacliff Inn in Aptos.
Yes.
And yes, they are an advertiser. And no, we're not limiting this to advertisers, obviously, because none of what has been mentioned already are advertisers on KSC.
They have a great
atmosphere,
too.
Yeah.
And I think people are quite often surprised that you find this very nice restaurant and lovely atmosphere.
I love their steamed clams at Severino's and because they have this garlicky broth, and they serve it to you with garlic bread that's to die for.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good.
So
also,
date,
they're scampi. They're Mexican
shrimp. If you're on a
scampi.
Date, you want to make sure that the date eats the garlic bread and the garlic sauce, too, obviously.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but that's a very nice place.
Ome Sichuan.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love – it's very rare that – and I wish I could get Roger to get put on the menu permanently instead of those – little, you know,
the small dishes
that, uh-huh. which I love. You know, it's great to go into a place where they serve you that stuff right away because you're dying of starvation and you don't want to have to wait 20 minutes.
And they're very special. Roger Grigsby, you probably know, studied Chinese at UCSC and then went and lived in China.
Yes.
Brought back these marvelous recipes. I would say it's one of the best Chinese restaurants I've ever
eaten
in my life. People come down from San Francisco to go to Ome.
Tofu knots are my favorite thing.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Tofu knots are out of this world. They're so delicious. And I hope Roger is listening. He said he was going to listen to the Saturday special. He didn't know that we were going to do this restaurant. I told him we were going to be doing the Minuteman thing. But if he's listening, maybe he'll get the message. And if he doesn't get the message, if he's not listening, those of you who do go to Ome, threatened to not go unless any further unless he puts MZ's favorite meal, tofu knots, on as an entree that's on the menu every day, once or twice a year in the little dishes.
Also, their red oil dumplings are to die for, and they also have a dish made with lychees. And I'll tell those of you listening who don't eat meat, because there are a lot of people around town that don't eat meat, I went there recently with a couple of friends who are vegetarian, and we ordered four dishes, all vegetarian, and I kind of roll my eyes a little bit because I really wanted the Ganpeng chicken, which is my all-time favorite.
I call it Gangbang chicken.
Gangbang chicken.
Yeah.
But I tell you, the food that we got, the four dishes we got, were to die for. Just wonderful. Ome was right up there as far as the restaurants.
And they make their own olali berry.
Yes.
Their own olali berry sorbet.
Sorbet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or sorbet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't have seeds in it, so I can eat it without worrying about having to have another operation for diverticulitis.
Which is very important.
Now too many people know too much about me, so I better shut my mouth.
But you know what? You just brought up something very important, Michael, and that is the fact that people have dietary restrictions. And one thing I'm really an advocate for is people being very speaking up about what it is that you need and what you can't eat and can't eat. And if a restaurant doesn't listen to you and respect that, then really you shouldn't be there. They're there to do their business and make it go well, and you're there and wanting to support their business. You need to be able to say, does this have garlic in it? I'm allergic to garlic. And they need to be able to tell you. Sometimes people go, well, I don't think so.
People who are allergic to garlic should be eliminated.
Well,
that's a terrible thing to say. No, I'm only kidding.
Not
I'm only
everyone
kidding.
Can go there. But it's kind of like the seeds, you know.
Be eliminated. That's ridiculous. Anyhow, if you want to give us a call and tell us what your favorite restaurant is and why, 479-1080. It's MZ and Ann Parker on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO, 25 minutes before 12 noon. Only 25 minutes remain. So if you're going to do it now. Pure Heart, what's your favorite restaurant?
Let me mention another restaurant that I really like.
Oh,
I think it's kind of unusual. And again, it's in Watsonville. Watsonville has a number of very nice restaurants. There's a Japanese restaurant called Mayuki in Watsonville. M-I-Y-U-K-I.
Yes.
Mayuki. Have you ever been there?
I have, actually. And it was
like
many
little,
years ago.
It's like a little neighborhood restaurant in Japan. I mean, and they have a particular dish that's very difficult to find. They used to have it at Persimmon House in Soquel, which closed down years ago. And it's called, I believe it's called Chawan Mushi. But what it is, it's a baked custard. It's a very soft, hot baked custard. Comes in a cup. And as you eat it, you discover these little treasures, a little piece of chicken, a little piece of pork, a shrimp, a little piece of...
That's what I remember from Persimmon House.
Wasn't it incredible?
It was really good.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was an egg custard. Yeah, I mean,
custard.
What kind of custard
you're
all.
It's hot.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, go ahead, Pure Heart. I put Pure Heart on, and I said, "And hey, you're there, and you're on the air with us. So what's your favorite restaurant?
Well, one restaurant our family enjoys is Gilda's on the Wharf.
I
never thought of going there until I heard it advertised on your station. So,
the
Thursday night, all you can eat spaghetti sounds really good, but I never got there for that.
We've talked. I kid around. I mean, it's not really kidding around. It's true. We've talked to Big Boy Stagnaro, who with his sister Gilda owned that restaurant. I said, hey, Big Boy, I mean, you've had the same time to freshen your commercial. He said, no, I like it just the way it is. It's the same commercial that's been on for 16 years on KSCO.
But in a town which is now full of taquerias and whatnot, it's a good place to get what I call kind of Americana food from my youth. Good old days.
Yes,
anything
absolutely.
You want. And it's, my daughter wants to go there for her birthday. We're going to do that. She loves the calamari. But anyway.
Ideal Fish Company is another good place for that.
Oh, that's very delicious. Yeah. Do they still have their lobster for locals?
They have their lobster for locals. And they also, once a month, they have a birthday special where you get the person whose birthday falls within that month if it's on your birthday, the people who are in that month, get a free prime rib.
Oh, my God.
You can't beat that.
Sounds great. We're a one-income family, so we don't go out very often.
Yes.
But, so we don't go to the foo-foo places you guys have mentioned, too, although I'd love to. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that.
Thank you, Pure Heart. And thank you very much for your donations to our programs. I think that's really sweet. You're a really special person.
The public radio stations as well, so what the heck? You know?
Okay, great.
That's great.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And he brought up a really good point, and that is about budgets. There also are a lot of places in town that have extremely good value for your budget. And one of them that just opened downtown about a month ago is Malabar Cafe. It was operating on Soquel Street, and then it had a sister company called Asian Rose downtown, and they combined the two companies and have opened it on this place on Front Street.
Uh-huh.
And exceptional value, very, very reasonable, really good food, and a very nice atmosphere, too.
Right. Abby and Salinas is our next caller.
Okay.
You're on, Abby, on the Saturday special with MZ and Ann.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two things. One, I wanted to know how you spell Omei.
O-M-E-I. I think.
Oh,
but our next, why don't I bring on our next caller who's the owner, and he'll tell you. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, MZ, you're terrible.
Yeah, well, just, you know how, I figured who knows how to spell it better than the owner. So go ahead and spell it.
It's O apostrophe M E I, and it's the name of one of the five holy mountains in China, and it's located in Sichuan province, so. You know, you had me on the edge of my seat here. I mean, this is really strange, and I think you may have been on the edge of your seat. By the way, hi, Ann.
Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Good, good. I just got back from a walk, and I was really waiting and looking forward to your show, and I really enjoyed the first part of the program, too. I mean, MZ always comes through with something great, so.
Well, actually, my mother deserves credit for that. She and Rosie put that together, so, yeah.
Okay, hey, it's all in the family.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting that, well, you know, I was sitting here thinking, okay, she's asking Mike, you know, what his favorite restaurants are. And I'm thinking, well, if he doesn't say it, what am I going to do to him? But if he does feel obligated to say it, that's weird, too, you know. So,
but you know, anyway. Roger?
That's where I go. And I've been going to Omei for years, and it's a great restaurant, you know.
And actually, there was nothing to worry about because I was going to mention it. Because I consider it one of the...
I was worried, you know. I like to call up here and just be Roger and not Omei's owner.
I see.
Know? And, but anyway, what really surprised me was, let's not talk about Omei, was, you know, Ann's discussion of Miyuki in Watsonville, and I agree, that's a really great place. And the same thing with Tepesuayo in Watsonville.
Wait a minute. Before we go much further, what is Abby and Salinas? Chop liver? I mean, she's still on the line with us. So, Abby, I didn't mean to take this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, shame on you, Roger. All you were asked is how to spell the name of your restaurant, and then you took over the program. Abby, what were you going to say?
I was going to tell you my favorite restaurant. It's down in Carmel. We go there for special occasions, and it's Little Napoli.
Oh.
And it's on the corner of 7th and Dolores. It's very good Italian food. It's a family-run restaurant by an Italian family out of Jersey. And the wine list is entirely imported from Italy. A lot of his sausages and meats are imported as well. And they have a dish called Al Forno Sinatra, and it is just wonderful.
Oh,
so I wanted to give that my 2 cents about that. We love it. I go there and I always want to order something else, but I just have to order that because I know how good it is.
I know. Yeah. My only worry at a lot of these restaurants that I like is that I have but one stomach to fill.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's the problem. Everything there that I've ever eaten was just wonderful, but I always want that.
Yeah.
So that's all. And I'll let you get back to Roger. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, I know Roger said let's not talk about Omei, but I need to say one more thing. As part of what I do in doing the Sentinel restaurant reviews, I'll usually talk to the chef and ask them, you know, how they got started, et cetera, and I'll ask them what are some places around town you'd like to go to. I would say that 40% of them mention Omei, and that's an amazing thing. When a chef, it's kind of like, you know, the places where the cops like to eat. When chefs like to eat somewhere, you know it's good.
So, well, my comment is thank our cooks. They deserve it. They recently got huge pay increases because we've changed our system of, you know, tips and stuff there, and they're actually earning, you know, what they deserve now, and, you know, and it's actually kind of turned the heat up underneath them to do a better job. So, you know, not that they're perfect. You know, I don't take very much credit for what goes on in the, you know, kitchen right now. It's those guys, so.
Yeah.
One thing, you know, being a professional, I don't eat out a lot. It's usually when somebody else invites me out, and that's what they want to do. You know, I don't know if you've seen that movie, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I lived in Taiwan for some time, and that's probably one of the best representations of real life in Taiwan and the food scene you'll ever see. And there's something not quite right about that, because, well, it's kind of right and it's not right. You know, people that work in the food industry don't tend to go and eat really complex foods, you know, on their time off. If they've been, you know, they want something very simple. And I remember my teacher, Chef Young, who's now passed away. He was the original chef at the New Riverside restaurant,
Which
has also passed away. And his family owned it used to be the Downtowner, then it turned into China Sichuan, and now it's the Hula Grill.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been there. I'd like to hear your opinion of that.
It's wonderful. It's a great, lively place. They have some really nice dishes, some very interesting fish treatment, and some of the best drinks in town. I have the best Mai Tai I've had since I was in Hawaii.
That latter is the last good reason to go.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
I'm going to be spending a lot more time frequenting Santa Cruz area restaurants.
Yeah.
Because
we've got a lot of good ones here.
Yeah. Now, there's a new Indian one where Melvin's Drugstore used to
Sitar.
Be. Sitar. Yeah, what's it called? Sitar?
Sitar.
Is it any good?
I have not been there yet, so I can't say.
Oh.
But I can say, I wanted to mention, because people may not be familiar with it, when I was talking about the Malabar Cafe,
That
is Sri Lankan food that's sort of been adapted to American taste. And so it's similar to Indian food. For people who are maybe a little hesitant about trying a new type of food, don't be. It's very, very accessible and very delicious.
Oh, listen, the weirder the food, the more I'm interested in. Yeah, the more ethnic. Hey, Roger, before we blast off and could take our next caller here, I really want to put you on the spot about tofu knots.
Well, I knew that. I actually called up a minute or two before, you know, deciding to come on the air and left a message. But your call taker couldn't remember tofu knots, so I figured I'd call in.
Okay.
Which I've never tasted. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. How do you describe? I don't even know how to describe the sauce. The tofu knots are like a high protein. It's tofu, right?
Well, it's not actually tofu. No, it's called baiye, which means 100 leaves, and it is tofu, but it's been pressed down so it's like the thickness of a noodle, and it's cut into long strips like fettuccine, then tied in knots.
But I don't feel like I'm eating carbs when I eat that, because they have the consistency that's decidedly proteinic.
Well, it's one of the elements of Chinese vegetarian cuisine, and the Chinese, when they do vegetarian food, they don't try to make it not feel like meat. In other words, they want it to feel like meat. They just don't want it to be meat.
Okay.
So by tying them in knots, it has that mouth feel of, you know, chewiness and juiciness, and it kind of squirts back at you when you bite into it. And that's what's yummy about it. And it's cooked with a type of fermented pickled, you know, I don't know how you'd say it. It's a salt-cured vegetable, mustard green, okay, and some chili and lots of sesame oil. It's very, very simple. But I think I told you how to make it, but you haven't done it yet, right?
No, I need telling doesn't work with me. I need an email or something, you need to do it for me, or I need to observe you at the restaurant or something.
Well, there we go. We'll do that.
Okay.
Hey, what about let's have some homemade cooking classes? Anybody out there interested?
Great idea.
Yeah. So
great
wanna,
idea.
we'll put that out. In fact, I think we already have. So listen, we got Artie in Santa Cruz about local restaurants. So thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
And we will. Yeah. Any chance of getting that on the menu though, regularly?
It's been on irregularly.
It is. I mean, as an entree.
It's a small dish.
Yeah, because every time I go in, it's like one out of every nine times I go to the restaurant, it shows up on the small dish thing, and it's never on the menu.
Now you know our strategy. You don't know when it's going to show up.
Oh,
it's gonna come in more often.
Okay.
Very sneaky.
Yeah. All right.
Take care, you guys.
Okay, see you later.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, Artie in Santa Cruz.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
What a topic. Somebody mentioned, the previous caller mentioned Tempura Sorajo in Watsonville.
Yes.
What a great find that place is.
What a great place. I agree.
It's funky, but the food is just excellent. It's regional cuisine. It's not your typical taco and burrito place. And the owner guarantees the food. If you don't like it, you know, you could bring it back. I've never had to do that, but it's wonderful. It's just a wonderful place.
He also knows the history of a lot of the food, too. Mr. Rivas does. They have one item there that originated with from nuns in Poblano, and he'll tell you the whole story. It's just wonderful. I love the place.
Is it the rose petal?
Yes. Oh, no, it's the Poblano chili dish.
Okay, okay.
Mm. It's amazing.
I got to give that a whirl. Speaking of Caribbean food, and I'm plugging a place up in San Francisco. I know we're talking about local restaurants. The place called Cha-Cha-Cha in the Haight-Ashbury.
I will go there today.
You will go there today?
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to... I'm going to a Curry Corner today in Hayward.
Okay.
But I'll tell you about that. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's okay, Michael. Cha-Cha-Cha is excellent. It's a Caribbean fusion. Now, my stepmom's Puerto Rican, and she didn't like it. She's true to her roots, and she was very judgmental, but it's a great place.
Cha-Cha-Cha, and it's on what street? Is it on Haight?
Haight Street, right before Stanyan, between the park. It's a wonderful place. It's Tapas. They have tapas and different fusion, Latin fusion food.
Would you send me an email, Artie, so that I can thank you if I decide that it's good?
Okay.
Or curse you if I hate it and that makes me vomit.
That's wonderful. And Artie, I wanted to say thank you because the area that I cover with my reviews goes as far as San Francisco North, and also the other lady who called, I go as far as Carmel South. So it's nice to have those. In fact, one of my all-time favorite restaurants in the last couple of years, it's called Gibraltar Cafe, which
Where's that?
It's in El Granado, just north of Half Moon Bay, a couple miles north of Half Moon Bay.
Now that sounds good.
The atmosphere, the level of the food, the people, everything about it was, I think,
Gibraltar
I gave them
Cafe.
One of my... Gibraltar Cafe.
Okay, I've heard
and
of that.
And it's also, the prices are also reasonable. It's very, very good food and reasonable prices, which is, you know, closer to get to San Francisco, the less chance that is of happening. So I was extremely impressed with them.
Well, thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay, Artie. Yeah, and thank you for your recommendation.
No problem.
Boy, I sure would like to get Saris Rao on the phone here. I read, you know, the Chronicle annually puts out a pamphlet in their Sunday paper, and you probably know about it. I think they call it Bargain Bites or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
And I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years ago, I saw this, and there were a bunch of really neat stories and places and profiles in that. And one in particular really caught my eye. It's a little hole in the wall place in Hayward, and you get off at Tennyson Road and go over to Mission Drive or whatever that main drag is, and it's literally a hole. There isn't more than one table in the place. And the lady sits there and cooks all day, or stands there and cooks all day, and the food is indescribably delicious. Now, it's sort of spicy.
And what's it called?
It's called Curry Corner. Curry Corner. Now, you know what? Here, we're going to do this here. We actually have to do a commercial break, right, Dave? So let's do that. Chris and Zianetti hold, Judy and Coralito's hold. We promise we'll get to you, and we only have 10 minutes left for the whole program. So let's do the commercials, and we'll be back in a few minutes here. Okay?
If you have trees or brush that need cutting or removal, there's a guy I think you should know about. If you have a bunch of stuff you want to clean out and need a dumpster, there's a guy I think you should know about. And it's the same guy. His name is Adolfo Garcia, and he works at Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals. Boy, does he work at Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals. In fact, he owns Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals with its efficient army of trucks, chippers, and other equipment that can get any tree or demolition job, large or small, done quickly with no nonsense and at a fair price. Pretty impressive for someone who's only 31 years old and built this business from nothing in just a few years. Got a tree job or need a dumpster? Call Community Tree Service at 763-2391. Talk to Regina or Naomi and let them take care of you. 763-2391. That's 763-2391. 763-2391.
Your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie of Direct Electric.
And I'm Dave Christie. Whether your problem is a light switch, breaker box, meter main, or anything in between,
between, Direct Electric technicians will fix it right the first time for the right price. And here's the best part. Direct Electric will not bill you for a service call.
I don't think they heard you, Dave. You better tell them again.
Okay. Direct Electric will not charge you for a service call.
And if you have an electrical emergency, call Direct Electric at 425-1407. I'll rouse Dave and he'll come running.
Priscilla is right. If you have a real electrical emergency, the kind that just can't wait till morning, call Direct Electric and we will come running.
Remember, your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. I will take your call.
And I will make certain that your problem gets fixed. Call Direct Electric at 425-1407. That's 425-1407.
Life's good at the beach. Hello, I'm Joe Crecchio, owner of Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz, where life is good. One reason why life is so good at Beach Auto Sales is that we save you money, a lot of money, on the best pre-owned cars, trucks, and vans you'll find anywhere, like Beach Auto's Deal of the Week. Listen to this.
Save $10,000 on a 2006 Mazda MPV with only 13,000 miles. Comes with a four-year, 50,000-mile factory warranty, two available for only $16,989.
Save money on your next car, truck, or van. Make a quick trip to see Joe Crecchio at Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz. Located down by the beach where life's good, I'm at 512 Pacific Avenue. And hey, if you have any special car or truck in mind, give me a ring. I'll find it for you. I'm Joe Crecchio, owner of Beach Auto Sales. 4200-200. That's right. My phone number is 4200-200. 4200-200.
Life's good at the beach.
That's 4200-200. What a great way to say a phone number. Okay, we're talking about good places to eat. And just for the heck of it, I'm going to call out. I'm just going to call out here, okay? Let's see. 1510. Okay. Where is that phone number? Okay. 581-4003. Okay. Okay. I don't think we've ever done this before, but what the heck? It's a lady we want to get on the radio. This is Saris. Saris. Saris Rao, it's Michael. We're on the air on 10,000 watts now. The whole world can hear us, okay? So, let's see.
You said you're going to pick it up at 3, right?
At 3 o'clock.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, but wait a second. Okay. What is it? It's chicken and fish and all kinds of stuff.
I'll give you chicken, fish, and two green vegetables. That's all I can do today.
Enough of that.
I'm doing a catering. Michael, I'm so busy.
Okay.
My place is still closed for business.
Okay, all right.
Okay. I'll see you at 3.
Okay, bye. So, you get an idea of what I'm talking about. I mean, this lady is, there's nobody like her in the world.
She sounds really busy.
She only will make food for people that she likes, and she only likes people who like her food. But everybody who knows about it loves her food. And so you could see that she's busy and stressed and everything all the time. But we plan to get her on the radio here probably on a Monday or Tuesday morning show with Rosie and the gang. There's no way to describe this food. It's just so delicious. And she calls the restaurant Curry Corner. I was going to ask her if it's okay to give the phone. No, I'm not going to do that. That wouldn't be nice because she'll get a whole bunch of phone calls and then she won't be able to cook for me when I get there. I'm supposed to pick it up at 3 o'clock today. Okay, so let's go back to our special guest here. Ann Parker, you back on, Ann?
I am back on.
Okay. And Chris in Zianti has a local favorite restaurant. What is it, Chris? Chris?
Yeah, it's not really a local favorite. Since she covers into San Francisco, and there's a restaurant, I think it's a Mediterranean-style restaurant. It's called Catch, C-A-T-C-H.
Yeah.
And it's on right in the Castro area.
Yeah.
But it's got a baby grand piano above the place, and just excellent, excellent food.
Great.
What kind of excellent food?
It's all Mediterranean, all Mediterranean-style food. So it's, it's food from Greece and food from anywhere in the Mediterranean. A lot of fish, and it's just it melts your mouth. It's so good.
I mean, wonderful.
Well, thank you for letting us know, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you think we should do a regular show like this? I think we should once in a while.
Well, there's one thing people will always talk. There are three things people will always talk about: politics,
Food and sex. So, you know, a show on any one of those things, you're always going to have people interested.
I think we should do a show on sex.
How about food and sex?
I think we should. Yeah.
Tom Jones. Call it Tom Jones Corner.
Right.
Can I real quickly just say one more thing about the whole budget idea?
Sure. Judy and Coralitos is up next, but wait.
Just real quick. Yeah. I do try to review a variety of different restaurants. Gigi's, I was very sorry when Gigi's closed down in Scotts Valley because I think they're really great value, make their own bread, wonderful soup. But there is one over on River Street. And also the Bagelry. The Bagelry makes marvelous soups. In addition to great bagel sandwiches and so on.
And I like the Bagelry's bagels better than Noah's.
I do, too.
Way better than Noah's.
Noah's is too chewy. And, you know,
yeah.
I even like Taylor's Hot Dog Stand in Watsonville. There's nothing special, but that's a piece of eating somewhere is the atmosphere. And standing there by Taylor's, munching on that hot dog, you feel like a kid again.
Yeah, especially the chili dog.
Yep.
Because it don't got no beans in it to make you flatulent.
That's right. We don't want the flatulence.
Okay, Judy and Coralitos, you're on.
Hi. A great program. I wish you would have this more often. I'm looking for a place within driving distance, not in San Francisco, though. I'm in Coralitos, that serves tapas. My husband and I went to Florida to Coconut Grove, and they're the most wonderful restaurant called Cafe Tutu Tangos. And everything is like in little appetizer sizes. They're called tapas.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I can't find any place around here.
What we need to do is get Roger Grigsby back on the telephone because he had a tapas restaurant on Mission Street in Santa Cruz for several years. It was outstanding, but they closed it down, and now they have a noodle house there. But I've so many people have said to me, I really miss that tapas house. I wish Roger hadn't closed it. Where can we go? Swaff downtown serves small plates, but they're not necessarily what you might think of as tapas, but that is a place that you can go and try some little dishes.
Yeah, we can noodle it around with Roger.
We can noodle it around, but I agree. I think we're sadly lacking in a tapas place. I'd like to see a great Jewish deli with a good pastrami sandwich and matzo ball soup.
Yeah, but you know, I've been told that it's a hell of a job to catch the matzah and cut his...
food and sex. You got it in there.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Santa Cruz area would welcome a tapas restaurant. I think it would just be the greatest idea. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And also, what was the restaurant that Artie was talking about that had the poblano chili?
That is a place in Watsonville called Fiesta Tepa Foroya, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it right. But you know what? I'm going to look it up for you right now, and I'll tell you.
Great.
Well, it's going to be too late because the program is going to end in 2019. Hey, thanks, Ann. Thanks, Judy. And thanks, everybody who called in. Okay, that's all, folks. You got that, don't you, Dave? You got it? Good. Here, play it.
Jane Metzler, Iraq inviting the neighbors. Iran among the countries represented at a one-day summit in Baghdad today. U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Zalmay Khalizad confirming he met with Iran's representatives.
I did talk with him directly and in the presence of others. We engaged across the table as well, and I did raise our concerns.
Khalizad says Iraq's neighbors share some of his concerns.
The conference highlighted the fact that Iraq's security is of critical interest, not just to Iraqis, but also to the region and to the world.
Iran's representative says he demanded a timetable for withdrawal of foreign troops. While the meeting was underway, a suicide car bomber killing at least 20 people in Baghdad's Shiite stronghold of Sadr City. President Bush holding more trade talks in Latin America today. Fox News Radio's Rich Johnson traveling with the president, reporting from Uruguay.
The big issue of keeping South America calm.
I want to thank you very much for your commitment to democracy and peace in our neighborhood.
A backhanded slap at others on the continent, most notably Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, whom the American president still won't refer to by name.
They have it all on videotape, a three-day-old baby girl abducted from her mother's room at a hospital in Lubbock, Texas.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
This was said to me by my good friend J.R. in Florida. And it's right on. Wouldn't it be great to turn on the TV and hear any U.S. president Democrat or Republican, give the following speech. My fellow Americans, as you all know, the defeat of the Iraq regime has been completed. Congress does not want to spend any more money on this war, so our mission in Iraq is over. This morning, I gave the order for a complete removal of our military from Iraq. Before me, I have two lists. One list contains the names of countries which stood by us during that conflict. The list is short. The United Kingdom, Spain, Bulgaria, Australia, and Poland. The other list contains everyone not on the first list, and that's most of the world's nations. Let me start by saying that effective immediately, foreign aid to all nations on list two ceases immediately and indefinitely. The money saved the first year alone will pretty much pay for the cost of the Iraqi war. The American people are no longer going to pour money into third world hellholes and watch those government leaders grow fat on corruption. Need help with a famine, wrestling with an epidemic? Call France. In the future, together with Congress, I will work to redirect this money towards solving the social problems we still have at home. On that note, a word to terrorist organizations. You torment us, and we will hunt you down and eliminate you and all your friends from the face of the earth. Thirsting for a gutsy country to terrorize? Try France or maybe China. I'm ordering the immediate severing of diplomatic relations with France, Germany, and Russia. Thanks for all your help, comrades. We are retiring from NATO as well. I have instructed the mayor of New York City to begin towing the many UN diplomatic vehicles located in Manhattan with more than two unpaid parking tickets to see that those vehicles will be stripped, shredded, and crushed. I don't care about whatever treaty pertains to this. You creeps have tens of thousands of unpaid tickets. Pay those tickets tomorrow or watch your precious Benz Beamers and limos be turned over to some of the finest chop shops in the world. A special note to our neighbor Canada, who is on list two. Since we're likely to be seeing a lot more of each other, you folks might want to try not pissing us off for a change. Mexico is also on the list. The recent President Fox and his entire corrupt government really makes it necessary for an attitude change. I will have a couple of extra tank and infantry divisions sitting around. Guess where I'm going to put them? Yep, border security. Oh, by the way, the United States is abrogating the NAFTA treaty starting now. We're tired of the one-way highway. At once, we'll be drilling for oil in Alaska, which will take care of our country's oil needs for decades to come. If you're opposed to this decision, pick a country from list two and move there. It's time for America to focus on its own welfare and its own citizens. Are we becoming isolationist? You bet. Nearly a century of trying to help folks live a decent life around the world has only earned us the undying enmity of just about everyone on the planet. It's time to eliminate hunger in America. It's time to eliminate homelessness in America. To the nations on list one, a final thought. Thanks, guys. We owe you, and we won't forget. To the nations on list two, a final note. You might want to learn to speak Arabic. To the world, I say, God bless America. Thank you and good night. Unquote. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay's Whirling.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, March 10th, 2007. Today, you can expect a mixture of clouds and sun with highs around 70 degrees. Wind should be north-northwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, you can expect some clouds with lows around 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with highs around 75 degrees, and tomorrow night will be partly cloudy with lows around 51 degrees. Currently, the temperature here at the station is 67 degrees, and coming up next is Perspectives right here on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. Enjoy the show.
Right there. afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name is Donald Davidson. I'll be your co-host today, and joining me in the studio to host the show is Dr. David Biles. Dr. Biles, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Donald. Thanks for the opportunity to come down here and be in the radio show today. Look at the weather is just awesome.
That's it.
It's tough to be here, but we've got a great topic.
Makes me feel guilty when I watch the news.
I understand. Some of you may be a little tired about talking about fluoride. This may be the last radio show before some significant action takes place locally, politically. I'm not sure. I donated a show a couple weeks ago for the local situation in Watsonville, and I'd like to update on that. We have a couple of guests on in a few minutes. Dr. David Kennedy, who's been on a number of times. He's a former president of the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and then Jeff Green, who can't recall all of Jeff's credentials, but he is very knowledgeable about fluoride and the politics. I think he's with Save the Water, Save the Well. We'll get that when we get him on. At any rate, before we get into that, I'd like to call everybody's attention to the fact that there is, at least as far as I know, a city council meeting scheduled at Watsonville on March 27th, and I don't think that fluoride is the number one thing on the agenda, but this is going to be something brewing for a while. It's not in the water yet, and I don't know if there's really any political solution to this even at this stage. $1.2 million has been given to the city of Watsonville from the California Dental Association Foundation, and all the legal requirements are met for fluoridation to continue. We've talked about the hazards, the dangers of fluoridation, and I